All right, we're talking to Brother Dave. You were a WTMA disc jockey during what period of time?
I came in September of 74 and was there on and off until late 75.
And WTMA, of course, was a top 40 station at that time, right?
Oh, yeah. It was probably the premier top 40 station in the Carolinas, excluding Big Waves in Charlotte.
Now, where were you before you came to WTMA?
I was at WRKT, Rocket Radio, in Cocoa Beach. When I originally went there, it was an AM top 40, and the FM was playing, in those days, what was called underground music, but now would be called alternative, I suppose. After I'd been there a few months, they went top 40 on the FM, so we were simulcasting the same thing on both stations. That was when I first discovered the power of FM with a top 40 format, and of course it really caught on, and today you can't hardly find a top 40 AM radio station anywhere.
Now, when you were at WTMA, they were simulcasting, weren't they? Or
no.
Had they already split off to WPXI?
No. When I originally came there, WPXI was and had been beautiful music for years, automated beautiful music with these great big huge tapes, roughly the size of an automobile tire. And they ran about four or five different machines with those great big tapes on them on WPXI. I did 7 to midnight. Part of my job was making sure those tapes didn't run out, so you had to go in there and change them every so often. Occasionally I'd forget, and they had an alarm light hooked up, and sirens and bells and whistles and horns and stuff would start going off, and this blue light would start flashing. Well, that meant that WPXI was off the air, and you'd really goofed up. So you'd go dashing down the hall and try and get those tapes changed.
Now, where exactly was the WPXI control room and the tapes?
As you come in the employee entrance, which is not the main entrance at the front of the building, but the little door off to the right that kind of sits back.
Mm-hmm.
You would turn left as soon as you go through that door, and then the next door on the left was where they had the WPXI automation. It was not really a studio. It was all tapes, and everything that was recorded in one of the two production rooms on down by the jock offices. They used those great big cart carousel machines, and the first really computer-controlled radio automation system, which was a DP-1, which basically was a computer system very similar to what was used on the Apollo moon flights. It controlled all the audio and made everything fall into place. One machine, all it did was tell the time. It just told the time all the time, so whenever you wanted the time, your computer would call for that particular tape machine, and it would just tell you what time it was.
Now, who was the program director at WTMA?
When I came there, John Trenton had been program director for years, but had moved up to station manager, or general manager, and the program director at that time was Lee Richards, who also was doing the morning show from 6 till 10 a.m., and then I think it was 10 until 1, you had Keith Nichols, and then 1 till about 3, or maybe it was noon to 3. Maybe Nichols did 10 to noon because he was production director. He had a lot of commercials to record and take care of. And then I think it was noon to 3 was John Burwell. And then 3 to 7, of course, was Booby Nash. Then I went on at 7 and worked till midnight. Then at midnight, Randy Scott came on. Randy and I got to be great friends, and I was real sad, and I believe it was about 1981 or 82 or so, he crashed his airplane. He became a private pilot and was doing airborne traffic reports.
Yeah, he was working for WCSC radio at that time.
I believe so. I was program director at CSC for a while. I didn't hire him there, but I did hire him when I worked at WQSN as operations manager.
I didn't know you worked at those stations, too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I was in Charleston a total of almost 8 years and would have stayed, but I had some personal things come up in my private life. My wife and I were separating. I felt it was better to get out of town. So I came to the Charlotte area, and I've been here ever since. That was December of 1980 when I moved up here.
So why did you leave TMA?
A couple of different reasons. I was hired for 7 to midnight. It was 1974. I came in September of 74. The country was in the grips of a major recession, gasoline crisis, layoffs, much like we have now, only I think it was worse. It was hurting radio stations because people just weren't spending money on advertising. The gentleman who was the overall president of the company, he was named Charles Smith, and he made the decision to make some cutbacks. So on December 23rd, 1974, after moving at great expense from Florida, I was laid off after about 3 months there. Merry Christmas, it's December 23rd, and you're now unemployed. but we'll hire you back as soon as we can. So I just sort of hung around and got a little part-time job at a station called 3WZ in Somerville, which was sort of a progressive rock station, and I hung out there for a couple of months. Well, then the Arbitron rating came back for the October-November 74 Arbitron report. I had the highest cumes and average quarter-hour shares they'd ever seen in a night jock. Back in those days, WPAL, which was off the air at sunset because of different FCC regulations, prevented them from being on the air. Even though they were off the air, Arbitron rated them as if they were on the air, which took a lot of listeners away from the night show at TMA. Somehow or another, I managed to win a lot of those people over, and the ratings came back really strong. I had seen the ratings and knew they were really good. Then Lee Richards called me up out of the blue one day and said, you know, you need to come in. We really want to talk to you. So I went back in, and they hired me back. Unfortunately, they let Randy Scott go as a result of that.
I guess he was doing nights in the interim.
He was actually still doing overnights. He did not have 7 to midnight open at that point because John Burwell was doing it. When they let me go, they stretched the shifts out. So it was 6 to 10 Lee, then 10 to 3 was Keith Nichols, then 3 to 7 was Booby, and 7 to midnight was Burwell. So they hadn't actually replaced me. So they put me on midnight till 6, let Randy Scott go. Randy and I were still good buddies. He went over to WKTM and was doing overnights there. So every night we would both get off at 6 a.m. in the morning. We would go get something to eat, go to my house, and watch Captain Kangaroo at 8 o'clock, which was on from 8 till 9. We were big Captain fans. So we hung out a lot, Randy Scott, I, and Booby Nash. It was just as common to have Randy and Booby at my house as a member of my family. We were real close there for several years. We used to make tapes that weren't scoped on 7.5-inch reels of half-mil Mylar, which would run about an hour 15 minutes. We would make these tapes for the submarine fleet. Whatever happened to all those tapes, I don't know. Then, after I'd been on overnights for a while, the night show came open, and they didn't hire me back for that or move me back to the 7 to midnight slots. I went, they hired some guy from Louisville, Kentucky. I went, I really wanted that 7 to midnight show back.
Who was that, by the way?
I can't honestly recall his name. I know he wasn't really that good.
Isn't that always the way it is?
He wasn't really that good. Apparently, I must have made either Chuck Smith angry or John Trenton. I don't know which. But they left me on the overnight show, so I thought, well, you know, I'm going nowhere with this. So where I was living at the time, I was living at Point James Apartments out on James Island, and the new general manager of WCSC had moved in. His name was Tony Brown. He was formerly the program director and one-time general manager at Kix in Raleigh, and they had hired him at WCSC to come in and sort of tighten everything up and turn it into a moneymaker. I got to know Tony there, and he was a private pilot, too, went fly with him a couple times in his plane, and one thing led to another, and the next thing I knew, I was hired for afternoon drive at WCSC, which previous to that had been automated. They were running the Drake Chenault Hit Parade format, and they were doing Mornings Live with Mike Hyatt. Mike had a great following at WCSC for years and years and then went on to do the weather, which I understand Keith Nichols is doing now. Mike and I got along really well. Mike was the program director, but he didn't really do much because it was all automated. They wanted me to do the music, so I was music director. Then when Kent Burkhart and Associates were hired as the consultants at WCSC to really try and turn things around upon the recommendation of Mr. Brown, Mike Hyatt, who had previous experience with that consulting firm, decided he would just get out of the radio side and stick to television, which might have been a good move. He hosted that midday show at 1 o'clock and was on there and then did the evening weathers. He was already doing that and doing the morning radio show. He just cut out doing the radio show. We hired a new guy to do the morning show. They moved me up to program director.
Who was that? Do you remember?
Buzz Bowman. I hired Buzz Bowman from Pittsburgh. Actually, he was living in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania at the time. I hired him, and he drove down here in his little Volkswagen with all his stuff in it and got to be good friends with Buzz.
Who were some of the other folks that you worked with there?
Dave Turner was our original night man. We hired Gary Bayes, B-A-I-Z-E, to do overnight. He was a musician. He loved to play the drums. He's probably in a rock band or a country band somewhere now. He was a really creative, talented person, but he had a terrible voice. But he was a jewel. I really liked Gary Bayes. I had to suspend him one time because he got in a fire extinguisher fight with somebody in the WCSC building in the lobby.
Now, when you were there, they were still in the TV building,
yeah,
right?
Right. The the big East Bay building. They were upstairs, both radio stations.
Kind of cramped headquarters up there, huh?
Yeah, it was kind of cramped. The CLC studio was very small. We had two production rooms. One was used for WXTC primarily, which was automated, beautiful music. And the other studio was fairly large but really, really old, and that was the one that's for WCSC. But the CSC control room was basically the size of a closet. You had room to sit down, you had room for two turntables, and that was pretty much it. Before we hired Buzz Bowman, we hired Herb Carson from WCOS in Columbia, and he came up and did mornings for a great while, and then he went to a station in Anderson, South Carolina, I think.
David, how did you all do against WTMA?
Terrible. We tried everything. We tried cash giveaways. We did personal appearances. We brought in Wolfman Jack a couple of different times for personal appearances. We had this one thing at the beach at Isle of Palms called CSC and Hawaiian Tropics, Wild and Wonderful Wacky Waikiki Weekend with Wolfman. We gave away a fortune in prizes and T-shirts, and we took money and buried it on the beach, and certain listeners who had qualified on the air got to go out there with a spoon and try and dig this money up. We didn't actually bury the money. What we actually buried were bottle caps off Hawaiian Tropic suntan products. We did all kinds of things. We were running practically no commercials because they couldn't sell ads. So it wasn't the commercials. It was just that WTMA was just, that was it. WKTM was coming on. CSC had a good signal and all, and we were definitely playing the music, but it wasn't going well. Sometimes when you try and kill a giant, it just takes a very long time, and actually I think it just took FM to do it. I think if WCSC had been on FM at that time, we probably could have done way better, but we just never could make really a dent.
Now, was WCSC automated during the overnight hours, or were you 24 hours a day?
They were. When I originally went there, it was Drake Chenault Hit Parade, except for the Mike Hyatt show. So they put me on an afternoons live, and then we hired a guy for middays, a guy named Robert St. John. We hired him out of Sumter, South Carolina. He was a mental case. He was great on the air, but he was wacky. And then we went live at night with David Turner, and then the next thing we did, we went live with Gary Bays. So this was a phase-in over about a year of going totally live and getting the Drake Chenault stuff off. While at CSC, I got an offer at KIOA in Des Moines, Iowa, from a friend that I worked for previously at WRKT in Cocoa Beach, Benjamin Hill. Benjamin wanted me to come to KIOA. So I'd never even been to Des Moines. I didn't know what it was like. So I said, sure, I'll take the job. And then after I found out what Des Moines was really like, I decided, gee, you know, I really don't want to move there. I'd already turned in my notice at WCSC and was leaving there. My wife didn't want to move, so I decided I would just see if I couldn't find another job locally, and wound up working at what was then called 15Q WQSN, which was an oldie goldie station. We played 50s and 60s music, and that's where I got to work with C.J. Jones, who later teamed up with Buzz Bowman. For years, they were C.J. and Buzz.
C.J. Jones.
Yeah, that's it, C.J. Jones. And the program director there at that time was named Bunky Anderson, who at one time was doing the weather on Channel 2 on the weekends. And I was at WQSN for a while, and the ratings just never went anywhere. So they changed the format and went to big band swing music.
I remember that.
That did not please me very much, so I decided I would start looking for another job. When I'd been at WTMA, I had worked with this amazing sales guy named Rudy Gresham. Rudy had somehow or another landed a job as the station manager at an AM-FM combo up near Charlotte in a small town called Albemarle. And he wanted me to come up there. He had been having me do voiceovers for commercials and stagers and stuff like that. And he just wanted to hire me outright to come up there and work up at that station and do 7 to midnight. He wanted me to do exactly the same thing I used to do on WTMA 7 to midnight. So I took him up on it, and my marriage was on the rocks. I thought it'd be a good idea to get out of town. So in December of 1980, I left Charleston and came to Albemarle to work there. I figured I wouldn't take long to break into Charlotte radio. I already had some good contacts in Charlotte radio. So I wound up eventually becoming the program director of the AM-FM in town, and I was there for about 7 years. Then I did do some full-time and part-time work in Charlotte, and have been. I've been part-time on Charlotte radio stations for years, probably since about 1983. I've worked at WROQ and Z100 and the Fox and Magic. I've been at Magic now for 12 years now. I do the Saturday afternoon show. I also just recently have started doing a weekend show on Cool 104.3 in Montgomery, Alabama, which I record at the Charlotte Studios of Magic, and then it goes down the internet line and lands on the servers down at that station down there. I just love this modern technology. I can work at two radio stations in two separate states and not even have to go there. So,
what are you doing during the week?
I've got a couple of things I do during the week. I'm a training officer in public safety communications for the local county. I've been in public safety training for 10 years this December. I do that full-time. A lot of great benefits working for the government. I never got in radio, 401k, retirement, you know, pension. We didn't have a credit union at the radio station, you know, that sort of thing. So, you know, there's a lot of benefits to it. Also, I'm a volunteer firefighter and rescue medic with a couple of local fire departments, and it's been very rewarding. And I do some of their training, too. Also instruct at two community colleges. I do emergency response instruction, and I teach CPR and first aid and HIV AIDS education and the whole gamut of health and safety programs. The only thing I don't instruct really is water safety. I leave that up to the lifeguards. I'm too old for that sort of thing. Let me get back to WPXI briefly. I had mentioned that they were beautiful music. While I was there, they switched formats and went to a what we would now call urban, but back then was called soul format. WPXI, when that happened, went from, like, the only people listening were doctors and dental offices during the day to probably, you know, a killer radio station. They had outstanding demographics, and they just did real well. That decision was made by John Trenton. He's the one that decided to do it. Of course, there was a storm of protests from doctors and dentists and elevator people, but all in all, that was a brilliant move on his part to take Pixie and make it R&B or soul or whatever he wanted to call it. I'd never heard it done that way. I'd always heard it done live, but when they took it and made it automated, it just added so much class to the music, and it showcased the music instead of the personalities. And I think that was sort of the dawning of a new era in radio, in R&B radio anyway.
Now, did they do the music themselves, or did they engage a service to provide the
music? Oh, they did it themselves. The music was done locally. John Trenton was very big on local control, and I don't think he would turn that over to somebody else. They made up their own reel-to-reel tapes for the classic cuts, and then all of the currents were on carts and were rotated in one of the carousels. But I loved listening to that radio station. It just had so much class and sounded so good and had a killer signal. You could hear it all over the Carolinas. I really do look back fondly on my WTMA days. I made some wonderful friends. I owe an incredible debt to Booby Nash. I can't ever pay that man back. He was so good to me and gave me encouragement when I needed it and was always there if I needed to talk and never, ever dumped any of his problems on me. I was always real grateful for him. I've just always looked up to him. I just always thought he was the way a radio personality should be. He was always happy and upbeat and always had something good to say for you. Keith Nichols, another great guy, always positive. He was sort of stays to himself. He wasn't over at my house partying every night like Randy and Booby and some of the others, but a really nice guy. John Burwell's the king of the nice guys. I can't say enough good about John either. Once I came to North Carolina, John and Rudy Gresham also then had recruited John Burwell to do what I was doing, which was to do some voiceovers and commercials and things like that for the station to bring in fresh voice. Rudy, after he hired me and I moved up to North Carolina, he was gone in 2 months. He was off on some other adventure, but I wound up staying here. I really like it in North Carolina.
Now, were you Brother Dave on the air at all of your stations?
No. When I left WTMA, I started using Dave Derrick at 3WZ, which I had used before. I used to do some news. I would use the Dave Derrick thing. Then when TMA hired me back, I went back as Brother Dave at WTMA to do the overnight. Then I left WTMA and went to WCSC, and then I started using Brother Dave Derrick, and I used that for the remainder of my tenure at CSC. Then when I went to QSN, I just used Dave Derrick, and I dropped the brother part. Then when I moved to North Carolina, I went back to the Brother Dave thing because apparently they had heard about me up here. WTMA, you know, it does have a special place because at that time it was the best-sounding radio station I'd ever heard in my life. 73, 74, 75 on through that area. They had an engineer there who was just incredible. He was absolutely fabulous. His name was Charlie McCants. He did things with the sound of that radio station that made an AM station sound like an FM station. I've never heard an AM station that sounded like that before. I grew up listening to WQXI in Atlanta. It did not sound that good. And, of course, WQXI was like the benchmark of Southern Top 40 radio stations. So WTMA really had something going for it. Had good programming, had good music, it had a solid history, it had great personalities, it had fun, it had spontaneity, it had a live feel to it, not like you get today. WTMA always had that spark, that spontaneity, that charisma and friendliness in the sound. And that went all the way around the board from the time Lee Richards went on in the morning at 6 o'clock till Randy Scott went off at 6 o'clock the next morning. There were live people. They were local people. They were right there in that studio. They were on the phone talking to you, taking your requests and dedications. It was a special thing. Everybody always talks about Quixie and Dixie, WQXI in Atlanta. They always talk about what a great radio station it was. Well, Quixie had nothing on WTMA during the time I was there. It was a legend.